I will say good morning. Our shiur today is sponsored by Zach and Corey Pomerantz for Refuah Shlema for their daughter Dalia Shiri Bas Penina Yafa. Baruch Hashem, nothing. She's good. Baruch Hashem, people already expressed incredible concern. She had a minor procedure. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring Refuah. So we are picking up today's daf is Peches 88. We are picking up on Pei Zayin Amud Beis 87b. So says the Gemara, right by eight echad meida shiparua, which is 11 lines up from the bottom. So eight echad meida shiparua. So remember again, this is one of the cases in the Mishnah where if an eight echad, one witness claims that her ksuva was paid, then halacha lemaisa, she has to go ahead and swear in order to collect for the rest of the ksuva. Says the Gemara, Savarai Barcham lemeimar shvua d'oraisa. Rabbi Barcham wanted to suggest that this type of shvua under these circumstances will be a biblical shvua. Because the pasuk says lo yokum eid echad be'ish lechol avon lechol chatos. Because the pasuk says that an eid echad will not be able to go ahead and stand up against the person lechol avon ulechol chatos. Now what that means, the Chol Avon refers that an Eid Echad cannot, through his testimony, create an obligation for a punishment. And Chatos means for a Karban, to which the Gemara darshens, the Chol Avon or the Chol Chatos with the Enokam. So it's only to go ahead and visit punishment upon the defendant, or to cause him to bring a Karban that an Eid Echad can't accomplish. Aval kam hu l'shvua. But an Eid Echad does have the ability to generate the Shvua. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, again, it could be that the Shvua the Eid Echad generates is in fact considered to be a Shvua de Oraisa, to which the Gemara Siva Amarmar, Komakom Shashnai Mechaivin Osa Mamon, Echad Mechaivo Shvua. And remember, again, Mar said, any situation in which two witnesses will generate an obligation for mammon, for monetary compensation. So an eid echad will generate an obligation for shvua, for an oath. So therefore Rami Barchama is suggesting that lemaisa this particular shvua is in fact a shvua d'oraisa, to which the Gemara says, Amar Rava shtei tshuvas b'davar. So Rava says there are two problems, two objections I have to this. Number one, chada. We said this yesterday. Number one, there's a very simple reason why this is not a biblical shvua. Because we're about to say biblical shvuas are a person takes a shvua, why? To get out of something, right? To be exempted from something. Here in this case, the woman's taking a shvua in order to collect payment. That's number one. Number two, behinishbas v'notelas. She's taking an oath and she's taking money. So that's number one, why it can't really be a biblical shvua. But oh, furthermore, in ishban al kviras karkos. And rather, and same thing over here, that remember, we don't take a shvua over a claim that ultimately, again, is secured by real estate. Where there's a kfira on karka. Kfiras karkos literally means a person denies, we'll call it land liability. The idea over here is it's a debt that's secured by real estate, which a ksuva is. Therefore, there are two reasons why this shvua can't be a shvua d'oraisa. Rather, Rava says, you're right, it is not a shvua d'oraisa. It is not a biblical shvua. Rather, it is a rabbinic shvua. Why? Kedei lahafis daito shel baal. In order to go ahead and calm down the baal. Because since the baal says, the baal produces an eid echad, that she was paid, and now she's saying, I was not. So lemaisa, again, the eid echad is there the shvua is there in order to calm the nerves of the baal who feels that his wife is lying. And that's another way of saying, Rabbi Osai, that the shvua is there in order to be able to really ascertain what the truth is. But lemaisa, again, it is only a rabbinic shvua. Top of peches. Ipi keachu, if the husband is a smart guy, maisila li de shvua d'oraisa. He has the ability to bring her to a shvua d'oraisa, to a biblical shvua. And I must remember again, so someone asked yesterday, well, what does it matter if it's a shvua d'oraisa, shvua d'rabbanon? So look at Rashi, tap Rashi on the daf, ipikehu hai baal, if the husband is a smart guy, li de shvua d'oraisa, shehi b'shem, o b'kinui, v'ochei seher b'yadah. So we'll say, so a couple of very simple distinctions. A shvua d'oraisa is done with the name of Hashem, or done with the name of Hashem, and furthermore, again, it's done holding a Sefer Torah. Versus a Shvua D'Rabbanon is not said with the name of Hashem, and it's not done holding a Sefer Torah. V'chamurehi ma'od, av ha-Shvua D'Rabbanon klala ba'alma ke'in shalanu. A Shvua D'Rabbanon, however, again, is more like an oath like we have today. I swear that I did or I did not. So therefore, again, it's obviously a Shvua D'oraisa is much more chamer. So the idea over here is that how do you bring, if he's a smart guy, he could bring her to a Shvua D'oraisa. How so? Yoyev lak suvasa ba'apechad sada. He goes ahead and he pays her ksuva in front of one witness. Bisamech sahada kama asahada basra. And what happens? And he goes ahead and he brings together the first witness and the second witness. So we'll say, let me clarify this. The case in the Mishnah over here that we read, which was on the bottom of Pei Zayin Amud Beis, was the situation of, let me just read this to you. Eid Echad, Me'ida Shehi Perua. Right? Remember again that the Eid Echad says that she was paid. So the Mishnah said, Keitzar, Haisak Suvasa Elefzos, Vamalais Kabati Suvaseich, Vuhu, Viyomaris, Lois Kabati, Ve'ed Echad Me'ida, Shehi Perua. So remember again, in this case, Suva's worth 1,000 Zos. He husband says he paid it. Wife says you only paid me 100. Eid Echad says he paid it. So Eid Echad is supporting the husband's claim. So Mar says, watch this. So you can go ahead and you pay her. So if you want to bring her to a Shvua Daraisa, listen to what the Gemara suggests. Pay her ksuva again. Pay her 1,000 zuz again in front of another witness. So we'll say, now, what do you have? He says, at this point in time, v'samech sahada kama sahada basra. So we'll say, now you can take the first witness. Witness number one said, that what? She got paid 1,000 zuz. Witness number two now is going to say, that what? She got paid 1,000 zuz. And you could go ahead and bring them together, which now says you have two witnesses that both claim that she was paid 1,000 zuz. Now remember, both are saying she was paid 1,000 zuz, but the total is 2,000 zuz, and therefore, mokim lu hanach kamai b'milvan, say that the first 1,000 zuz was a loan. So this way, again, what you're doing over here is, you now have two witnesses claiming that she was paid 1,000 zuz, but in reality, and therefore, what do you do with the first 1,000 zuz? The first 1,000 zuz retroactively say was a loan to her, therefore she has to pay it back, and now we have testimony that the ksuva was paid. So maskef Rav Shishi Rei Dravidi. So Rav Shishi says that makes no sense. Heich samech sahada kama sahada basra. I say, you can't do that. Meaning, remember, witnesses only combine if what? If they witness the same event. Meaning, now we're going to say, understand what the Havamina is. The Havamina is, they are witnessing the same event. The Havamina is that they're both witnessing the husband paying the wife the ksuva. So this one's saying, I saw the husband pay the wife the ksuva. This one's saying, I saw the husband pay the wife the ksuva. And therefore, the Havamina is, since they're both testifying to the same yesod, therefore they could combine. To which Rav Shishi Rei Dravidi says, that's just not the way Eidos works. It's not enough for them to be testifying about the same type of event. They have to be testifying about what? The same event. So therefore, there is no way to take a witness who saw that event, earlier event, and a witness that saw this event and combine them. So the Gemara says, how can you possibly go ahead and combine these two witnesses when in reality they are testifying about separate types of events? Rav Shishi Rei Dravidi, Yohev lak suvasa ba'ape sahada kama. Listen to this. Uvisadak basra. To which Ravidi suggests, I think you can still accomplish what you want to accomplish, but a little bit differently. Call the first witness, right? Remember again, the first witness was the one who's already testifying. Their husband paid the ksuva. So bring the first witness and join with him a second witness and pay her the ksuva again. Pay her another 1,000 zuz. Umokim la lahanich kamai bahava. That I must understand. Now, at this point in time, what you do have is what? If you go ahead and you pay this ksuva a second time in front of the first witness, plus you add on a second witness, you now have payment of the ksuva in front of the first witness, in front of two witnesses. Payment of the ksuva in front of the two witnesses. What about the fact that you still have an Eid Echad that says that he gave her 1,000 zuz? So the husband will say that was for a loan. Now I will say again, now how does that help him in his situation? So the only thing it does help him is that Lamaisa, again, we now have Eidos on the Ksuva, and she'd have to still take the Shvua about the loan. That's what she'd have to take the Shvua. But the idea is we now have Eidos on the Ksuva, and again, we have an Eid Echad about the first amount of money. First amount of money is a loan. She says take a Shvua about the loan. Maskev Ravashi, but Ravashi says, I still don't understand. Akati Yichol Le'meimar Beis Ksuvas Havoi. So say, this is interesting. She could have a counterclaim. And the counterclaim is, yes, you paid me twice, but that's okay. I have two ksuvas. I have two ksuvas. I'm also like, you could have a situation like this where a woman has two ksuvas, that the husband is exceptionally generous, right? You can write for your wife as many ksuvas as you want, that outlines as much money as you want. So the idea is this would be, sometimes a person would do this, the simple way to do this would be you revisit or you revise the actual ksuva. But let's say a person didn't want to do that. I don't want to start going through revision of shtar. Sometimes it's easier just to write a whole new document. I write you a new ksuva. So she could say, you're right, you paid me then and you paid me now. That's because I have two ksuvas. So Rashi says, no, of course this only works, lemaisa, if the husband tells the witnesses what his intentions are from the beginning. So if he tells them what the intentions are from the beginning, then lemaisa, again, that precludes her from being able to make a latter claim that she had two ksuvas. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, the modula, the sahado kamal basra lefnei piron, b'sei piron asheni. Du'u said, he says to the two witnesses before the payment of the second, or I should say before the second payment, du'u shekvar parati l'ksuvas b'fnei echad mikem. No, I already paid her the ksuva in front of one of you. V'hi konferes ve'ini rotsi l'por ashenis l'shem ksuva ve'ani rotsi l'por ashenis l'shem ksuva shiyi ulish ne eden b'davar ve'etva sarishonim v'yesh li alein eid echad v'tischayv shvodoraisa v'chei even this sham inhu velo misaya lahai ad eight kama su lo matzis lemer base ksuva savu de milsa de lo shrichahu. So what I say, the idea over here is this whole case only works if the husband tells the eidim of what his intentions are from the beginning. So remember again, the eid echad knows that lemaisi, the eid echad has been through this entire process with him. He knows that there's not a second ksuva, and at the end of the day, what the Gemara says is the reason why she can't claim a second ksuva now suddenly is why milsa de lo shrichah. Milsa de lo shlicha means that it's not a common occurrence. It's not the norm. So because it's not the norm, unless, of course, she could actually substantiate that claim by producing two documents, then lemaisa she will not be believed with that taino. Minichasim mishubadim. So remember again, the next case of the Mishnah was that a woman wants to go ahead. A woman's divorced, right? And she wants to collect her ksuva. And what happened? During the course of the marriage, the husband sold his property to other people. So the halacha is, v'hi nifras min alakuchos, lo tirfa ela b'shvua. So if she wants to seize sold property in satisfaction of her ksuva debt, she can do so, but she has to do so only with the shvua. Says the Gemara, tanan hasam, we learned there, v'cheni yisum lo yifru ela b'shvua. So to yisumim, if orphans want to collect from property, they also could only collect with a shvua. So the Gemara says, Miman, what's the case? Who are the Yisomim collecting from? Ilema Malve, if you want to say that they're collecting ultimately again from the Malve. Ilema Malve, if you want to say we're talking about the lender, Hashta Avihan Shakel Belo Shvua. The inhu b'shvua. So we'll say, if their father lends someone money, and now what happened? The father died, they inherited the debt, and they want to go collect the money from the debtor. So are you telling me now that they have to take a shvua before collecting the money? Doesn't make sense. If their father was alive and the father was collecting the money, wouldn't have to take a shvua. The inheritors inherit the position of their father, which means they shouldn't have to take a shvua either. El ha'chi karma, this is what it means to say. V'chene yesomim mina yesomim. Oh, but we'll say, listen to this. Let's say Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and then what happens? Reuven dies, and Shimon dies. So now Shimon's heir, Shimon's children, are coming to collect the debt from Reuven's children. Reuven's children. So lemaisa, what does the Gemara say? That halacha lemaisa, again, when the Yisomim, who are the heirs of the creditor, come to collect the debt from the Yisomim, the heirs of the debtor, they can only do so with a shvua. Because they both say, here's the interest, you hear the chap over here? The chap over here is that when, let's say, the children of Shimon, Shimon is the creditor. When the children of Shimon come down, normally, if you're the creditor, you don't have to take a shvua before you collect money. But the idea over here is what? The idea over here is because Shimon's Yisomim are collecting from Reuven's Yisomim, there's a halacha. What's the halacha? You can't collect from Nichsa Yisomim without what? Without a shvua. And that is true in this case over here, even if in fact you are the creditor. So the Gemara says, this is only true in the case of the following, where the Yisomim said, where the Yisomim say, our father told us that yes, he borrowed from your father, but he paid it back. But if the Yisomim said, Amr lanu abba, loli visi, we never even borrowed money. My father told us we never borrowed money from your father. af b'shvua lo yifru, then lemais again, even if the creditor's heirs take a shvua, the children of the borrower are still not obligated to pay back. Maskif la Rava. Rava said, adra, but just the opposite. Kala omer lo levisi, ke omer lo parati dam. Rabbi, so listen to this. Any person who says, I did not borrow, that's the equivalent of saying what? That I did not pay back. Now I will say, because understand, what do you have in this case? The children of Shimon the creditor show up, and they say, well, and remember, what are they holding in their hand? They have shtar, right? There's a document. So therefore, Rava comes along and says, if Shimon's children say, well, our father told us he never borrowed money, I will say, that is not true. But I'll tell you what it does tell us. If you're claiming you never borrowed money, that also means what? You never paid back. Right? Because to say you never borrowed money, that is not a valid claim. We have a shtar against you. Now, you want to contest the authenticity of the shtar, yeah, a person always has the right to do so. But lemaisa, again, we have a shtar in our hand. Therefore, if you're telling me you didn't borrow, what you're essentially telling me is that you didn't pay back. Ella e itmar halchitmar. Rather, here's what you have to say. Amar Rav Zvika, Rami Yehuda, also is very interesting. Remember, again, this is the case where Yisomim are coming to collect from Yisomim. So the Yisomim of the Malve of the lender are coming to collect from the Yisomim of the Lova of the borrower. So lo shanu ela sha'amru Yisomim amr lano abba li visi uparati. So Rabbi say, if the heirs of the borrower say to the heirs of the lender, our father told us that he borrowed from your father, but he paid back. So then Rabbi say, then what? Then the halacha is that if the heirs of the lender want to collect the money, they have to take a shvua. Aval amru lanu abba loli visi. But however, again, if the heirs of the borrower say to the heirs of the lender, our father told us that he never even borrowed money from your father, then what? Then if front and shalob shvua. Then Abba said, then it's very interesting, right? Then the heirs of the lender have the ability to collect the money without a shvua. Why, Rabbi Osai? Shekala omer lo livisi, ki omer lo parati dami. Because Rabbi Osai, again, this is very important. It's halacha l'maisa. If you show up to claims that someone owes you money, and you have a shtar, and they said, well, we never borrowed from you anything. Again, Rabbi Osai, unless they could disprove that the shtar is falsified, l'maisa, that claim that we did not borrow is halachically interpreted as we did not pay. And therefore, in this case over here, if the heirs of the borrower were to say to the heirs of the lender, our father told us he never borrowed money from you, l'maisa, again, that's a clear indication that he did borrow, not only that he did borrow, but that he didn't pay. And therefore, again, the heirs of the lender will collect without a shvua, says the Remember again, the Mishnah said that if she wants to collect money, right, from him, meaning that she wants her ksuva, and he went overseas, and she wants her ksuva, so the halacha is that she could only go ahead and collect with the shvua. She has to take a shvua first. So says the Gemara, Amar Acha Sarabira Maase Balipnei Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'antuchya. There was once an episode that occurred with Rabbi Yitzchak in Antuchya. But Amar Lo Shana El Ksuvas Isha Mishum Chino Ava Bal Chov Lo. Rabbi Yitzchak said that this ability to seize property not in the presence of the creditor after you take a shvua is only a din by ksuvas isha. Is only a din by a woman, mishum chinah, because of favor. In other words, that the whole idea is we want women to feel secure in the marriage. We want them to know that, God forbid, in the event of dissolution of the marriage, they will be financially taken care of. And we don't want them to think that if the husband is a flight risk, they're going to be stuck without their ksuva. Therefore, again, there's a special dispensation by ksuva that Bezin could seize property not in the presence of the Baal after she takes a shvua. But this doesn't apply, let's say, in a regular case of a creditor. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Rav Nachman, Afilu Balchov. Rava said in the Imarach, it's not true, even a Balchov, which means like this, that if Reuven borrowed money from me, and then Reuven's not here, and I want to get paid, so Rava is suggesting I can go to Bezdin, and Bezdin could seize property from Reuven in order to satisfy my debt. Obviously, I may have to take a shvua, I have to prove my claim. So why is it? Well, so listen to this. Shelo yehei kol echad ve'echad notal ma'osav shechavero, v'holech v'yoshev b'medinas hayam, v'atono adalas b'fnei lavin. I'll tell you why this has to be true. Because if this is not true, you absolutely will shut down the loan market. Why, Rabosai? Because you understand what that means? That means if I borrow money from Reuven, and the due date is coming, right, let's say I borrow a lot of money from him, and I decide, you know what, I don't want to pay back. So you know what I do? I decide to take a sabbatical to the Caymans, right? And I decide to go ahead and just go away. You know what's going to happen. So Reuven's never going to be able to collect his money. So if Reuven can't collect his money, on both sides, people will be exceptionally reticent to lend. Because that means that any time that someone wants to avoid paying their creditor back, all they need to do is what? Leave town. Therefore, Rava says that creates an impossible situation. Therefore, Rava paskins, which is halacha l'maisa, that the Beis Din can seize property of the borrower, of the debtor, in a situation where he is not there, assuming that the creditor first goes ahead and takes the shul. So just as an aside, in Hilchos Tzedakah in Yeridaya, there's an interesting discussion as to whether or not you could seize Ma'os Tzedakah from someone. Let's say, again, there's a communal assessment, and everybody has to pay Tzedakah, and there's a particular person who has not paid his share, so there's an interesting shaila in Halacha, can you seize his property? Can you seize his property? So there's Machlokas in the Mechaber and the Shach. The Mechaber seems to say that Lamaisi, you can go ahead and seize his property if he's not present in order to go ahead and satisfies the Daka. That Shach disagrees. But it's interesting, we have this tension, this idea of, on one hand, we don't want to seize property, on the other hand, for the benefit of society, sometimes people have to get paid. So Rava paskins that this is not just a din by Ksuba, but it's a din by general creditors as well. Rav Shimon Omer calls Manshi Tovas Ksubasa. Rav Shimon said a very interesting statement. So Rav Shimon said, as long as she is claiming her Ksuba, so the Yarshin have the ability to impose an oath upon her. But if she is not claiming her ksuba, then the Yarshin don't have the ability to impose an oath upon her. Says the Gemara, Reb Shimon Ahiya. What is Reb Shimon referring to? Meaning, which part of the Mishnah is he commenting on? On Reb Yirmiya, aha, he's referring to the following clause: V'nifra'a shelo b'fanav, so the v'lo tifra'a elo b'shvua, that if she wants to collect payment for her ksuba, not in his presence, so she cannot collect without a shvua. To which the Reb Shimon qualifies this lo shana el lemazoni. Excuse me, lo shana lemazoni, but lo shana leksuva. It makes no difference if she wants money for her mazonos, for her support, or if she wants money for her ksuva. Either way, if she wants to seize assets of the husband when the husband is not present, what does she have to do? She says take a shvua before doing so. Va'ashrav shonam yam, Reb Shimon comes along and says, no, calls banshat avas ksuva sa yersheha mashbienosa. Comes along Reb Shimon to say That's not necessarily true. If she's claiming her ksuva, then the Yarshim have the ability to make her take an oath. However, but if she's not claiming her ksuva, i.e., she's only claiming, for example, support, mizonos, then ein Yarshim mash be an osa, then ultimately the Yarshim are not going ahead they cannot impose an oath upon her. The kamiflegi and the Tanakam and Reb Shimon are arguing, beplukta dechanan ubnei kohanim gidolim. They're arguing with the machlokis between Chanan and the sons of Kohanim Gidolim. We'll say, I don't know who these sons of Kohanim Gidolim are, but what a way to be known, right? The sons of the Kohanim Gidolim. So we'll say, this is not because we learned, Misha halach l'medina sayam, if someone went overseas, v'ishto tovas mizonos. So we'll say, again, this guy is a real keeper. He goes overseas, right, and he, quote unquote, forgets to leave his wife any money. So what happens? So now remember, so she comes to pay. It happens. Right? So what happens? So not she goes, approximately, we live in the age of credit cards and ATMs. Chas v'shalom, it would never. I'm sorry? They were maxed out, right? So what happens? No personal vignettes over here, all right? So the Gemara says over here, so what happens? So he goes overseas and he forgets to leave her money for mizonos. She shows up to Beis Din and she says, I need mizonos. So we'll say, so what happens? Chanan Omer, Tishava Besof, below Tishava Betchila. So Chanan says, I will say, essentially, literally what it means is, she swears at the end but does not swear at the beginning. That's another way of saying, the only time a woman has to swear before receiving assets from her husband's estate is when she collects her ksuba. Because I will say, again, the interesting part is, and we spoke about this before, the oath by ksuba collection has to do with a general concern that we want to make sure before we pay the ksuba that the husband did not give the wife an item of value over the course of the marriage that was supposed to be payment for the ksuba. So in order to ensure that she's not double dipping in the estate, so we make her take a shvua. But Chanan says there's no shvua by mizonos. If she comes to Beis Din and she claims that she needs mizonos, there is no prerequisite for a shvua before she's given mizonos. Ubnei Kohanim, nechleku alav b'nei Kohanim Gidolim, and the sons of the Kohanim Gidolim argued on this, and they said, va'amru tishav b'tchila ubasof. And the b'nei Kohanim Gidolim said that what? That l'maisa, again, she has to swear at the beginning and at the end. Therefore, Reb Shimon kechanan, Reb Shimon Abose holds like Chanan, right? Because remember, that's what Reb Shimon is saying in the Mishnah. Reb Shimon says, the only time one has to take a shvua is when she's collecting her ksuva. But if she wants to collect for mezonos, there is no shvua. The rabbanon, the rabbis, meaning the Tanakam and the Mishnah, will say ki b'nei kohanim gedolim. Will say no, like the b'nei kohanim gedolim, she has to take a shvua all the time. Whenever she wants to extract money, she always must take a shvua. Maske for Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes raises the kashis. I'll tell you why this explanation is difficult. Hi yarshin mashpien osa. Bezin mashpien osa mi boile. So we'll say, so the Gemara says it doesn't make sense. Because if you're telling me that Rav Shimon is commenting on a case where what? Where Lemaisa, again, she's claiming mizonos and she's not claiming ksuva, and you're talking about a case where the husband went overseas, then why does he phrase it in the Mishnah as the orphans could go ahead and cause her to swear? They're only orphans if what, Rabbi Osai? If the husband's dead. Vipashas, the case that you're telling me Rav Shimon is referring to is not a case where the husband's dead, but rather, again, where he simply went overseas. If that's the case, then the Mishnah should not have read that the Yarshim imposed an oath upon her, but rather, again, Beis Din imposes an oath upon her. Therefore, both say the Gemara has to start from scratch. The Gemara says, no. Rav Shimon's statement in the Mishnah must be referring to the following case. Halcha mikever baila lebeis aviha. Remember, this was a phrase in the Mishnah. She went from the grave of her husband to the house of her father, or to the house of her father-in-law. The idea is she went from the funeral. But I'll say this is not a din in immediacy. This is a din in saying that she doesn't get involved in the affairs of the estate. So after the Levaya, she goes to her father's house, she goes to her father-in-law's house. She does not involve herself in the financial affairs of the estate. Velo na'asis apotropia, she did not become any kind of executor or involved in the estate. Ein hayershim mashbien osa. So we'll say in that case, the yershim don't have the ability to go ahead and impose an oath upon her. The imnaasis apotropia, but Rabbo say again, the maisa, if she does become an apotropis, then yershin mashbien osa al haosid lavo. Then Rabbo say, remember again, the yershim have the ability to impose an oath upon her for what? Everything going forward. The im mashbien osa mashavar, but they do not have the ability to impose an oath on that which happened in the past. The osir Reb Shimon, the main man Reb Shimon, comes along and he wants to add, calls man shetovas ksuvasa yarshin mashbien osa. If she is claiming her ksuva, then the yarshim have the ability to go ahead. The yarshim have the ability to go ahead and impose an oath upon her. However, ain't tovas ksuvasa. But if she is not claiming her ksuva, then ain ha yarshin mashbien osa. Then the yarshim do not have the ability to impose an oath upon her. Vikamiflagi. I will say, by the way, if you just go right across mamish. Mamish, right across in Rashi, is like one of these gifts. Whoever put together Tzuras Adav, one of these gifts. You see, if you go right across in Rashi, you see those words? What are the words there? Va'asa Reb Shimon. You see that? It's great, no? Okay. Va'asa Reb Shimon. I'm easily excited, right? Va'asa Reb Shimon. L'meimar, look in the middle of that Rashi, calls Masha Tavas Ksuvasa Mehen, Mashbien Osa Ka'aba Shol Ben Ima Miriam. Oh. So keep your finger in that Rashi and let's go on to the Gemara. V'kamiflegi be'pluta da'abashal v'rabbanon. And Abosai, the machlokis over here between Reb Shimon and the Rabbanon is the machlokis in Abashal and Ima Miriam that we saw, Abashal and Ima Miriam, and the Rabbanon that we saw in yesterday's daf. This nan, apetropis sheminuhu avi yisomim. Abosai, if there's an apetropis, someone overseeing the estate, who was appointed by the father of the Yisomim. So what's the halacha? Yishava. Then Rabbi says he has to take an oath. He has to take an oath that Lamaisa, he is an honest individual. On the other hand, Manuhu Bezdin, lo Yishava. But Rabbi says if Bezdin appointed the apotropis, then Lamaisa what? Then he doesn't have to take an oath. Now, Rabbi says, now interesting enough, according to this approach, the reason why he doesn't have to take an oath is because there's a concern. If you make him take an oath, then what? People aren't going to take this job. Right? What do I need this for? I am trying to do a favor for the Beis, and what do I need this for if they're going to impose a shvu on me? Abba Shalom says just the opposite. Chiluf ha-dvarim, just the opposite. Minuhu Beis Din Yishava. I will say just the opposite. If a person is appointed by Beis Din, we can impose the shvu. And I will say, what's the logic behind that? Because being appointed by Beis Din is a covet. So, right, if you are appointed as an apotropis by Beis Din, that shows that Beis Din, the institution, right, of Judaism, believes in you. So such a cover like that, a person doesn't mind being suggested to a shavua. However, avi yisomim lo yishava. But Rabbi say what? If the apotropos is appointed by the father yisomim, then you can't make him take a shavua. Why, Rabbi say? Because that's a favor. that someone is doing perhaps for someone now who is dead. And if the favor is going to make me take a shvua every single time, it's just simply not going to do it. So therefore, the Gemara suggests, Reb Shimon Kabashol, Reb Shimon holds like Kabashol, V'Rabbanon Kirabbanon, and the Rabbanon hold like the Rabbanon. Rabbanon says, see, now go back to that Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says, Over Asa, Reb Shimon, the Meimar calls Mashat Avas Ksuva Asa Mehen. Reb Shimon comes along and says, anytime that she claims Ksuva from the Yershim, Mashpin Osa Kabashol ben Ima Miriam, Damar Lael, Aval Ma'esa Shahare Amru Habali Parmenichse Somim Lo Yifra Ela B'Shvua. So therefore again, the Gemara now is suggesting that Lemaisa, again, the machlokis in Reb Shimon and the Rabbanon is the machlokis of Abashol and the Rabbanon. Maskif l'Abaye, so Abaye says, 1 second, Hai calls man shetavas ksuvasa. It's said, then when Reb Shimon says in the Mishnah, any time that she claims her ksuva, or all the time that she claims her ksuva, it should say, Im tova asmi boyle. It should say, if she claims her ksuva, she will be chayav in a shvua. Ela amra bayaha. So we'll say, now, last try. Abaye says, okay, so now it must be that Reb Shimon's statement is going on the following. What is it going on? Chasav la neder ushvua inli alayich. Eino yachol lahashpia. Must remember, again, 2 days ago, a man writes to his wife, I don't have any claim of a neder or a shvua against you. Eino yachol lahashpia. He has no ability to what? To go ahead and impose a shvua upon her. Neder ushvua inli v'lo liyorshai v'lo b'ayim b'rshusi. So if he writes, I have no claim. I have no claim of a neder or a shvua against you, against your inheritors. Or excuse me, I don't have a claim against you. My inheritors don't claim. I have a claim against you. Anyone coming in my stead doesn't have a claim against you. Against you, alayich v'al yorshech, against your inheritors v'al b'ayim b'rshus b'ayim b'rshusech. Anyone who comes in your stead ein yachol lahashbia lohu. Below Yarshav, below Abayim Birshuso. So we'll say, therefore, again, in such a situation like this, you free her from all liability. He can't impose an oath. His heirs can't impose an oath. Anyone coming in his stead can't impose an oath. Not upon her, Lohi, below Liarsha, not upon her inheritors, below the Abayim Birshuso, not anyone who comes in her stead. The Asir Shimon the Meimar, Kolzman Shetova Ask Suvasa, Yarshin Mashpian Osa Arabos, and Shimon comes along to say what? Shimon comes along to say that no, it's not true. Anytime she wants to collect her ksuva, we'll say, what's going to be the halacha? She has to take she has to swear. She has to swear in order to take the ksuva from the estate that is now owned by the Yisom. So we'll say, so fundamental machlokis in the Mishnah is, so the Tanakhama will hold that what? If a husband frees his wife from all shavua and neder liability, that applies to what? Sure. That applies to what? It applies to everything, right? It applies to everything. It applies during his lifetime, during his death. It applies to her ksuva. It applies to mizonos. She is freed from all shavuos. Reb Shimon says it works for almost everything. That if she, when he dies, if she wants to collect her ksuva from the estate, she must still go ahead and take kshvua before taking property from the yisomim. Ve'kamiflagi beplukta da'abashol ben Miriam v'rabbanon. And ultimately, the machlokis of Shimon and the Rabbanon in the Mishnah is the same previous machlokis of Avishol ben Ima Miriam and the Rabbanon. Remember that machlokis? That machlokis was the Rabbanon say that if you exempt your wife from all shavuos and all nadarim, then it works. And Avishol ben Miriam was the one who came along and said, "What? Avam ma'es? What could I do?" The rabbis instituted that kalaba lipara lifra minichse yisomim lo yifra ella b'shvua. So we'll say, so Avishol ben Ima Miriam is saying, "I agree that technically speaking, such a verbiage where you free your wife and all of her heirs and everyone from a shvua from another should work. But what can I do?" Chazal instituted at the end of the day that you can't take a ksuva from nichse yisomim without a shvua. Therefore, I will say the Gemara is suggesting that the Tanakama and Reb Shimon in the Mishnah have the same machlokis as the Rabbanon and Avishol ben Miriam. So the Tana of our Mishnah, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah holds like the Rabbanon. Therefore says, if a husband frees his wife from all shvua and neder liability, that applies even to her ability to collect ksuva from the Yisomim without the shvua. And Reb Shimon holds like Avishol ben Ima Miriam, who says that even if he freed her from all shvua and neder liability, if she wants to collect her ksuva, she must go ahead and take an oath. So maskif la Rapapa, so Rapapa raises a kasha, Hatenach kolzman shetovas ksuvasa, Eina tavas ksuvasa, my ikalamemar. So I'll say, that works fine. That works fine as long as she is claiming her ksuva. Look at Rashi just a moment. Hatena kozman shatavas asala fuki midrabanan. The amri af mishvuas hayesomim petura v'nefras below shvua v'asrim shem lemeimar lo tifra ela b'shvua. So ino tavas ksuva demaskana demilse lemay tanya ula afuki mima. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. So what the Gemara is asking over here, what really Rav Papa is asking is, are you telling me that the machlokes between Reb Shimon and the Rabbanon is only in one very specific case where she's claiming the ksuva? Meaning, let's say she's not claiming the ksuva, is there still some point of contention between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakama? To which the Gemara says, yes. Ela amar Rav Papa la'afuki mid Rabbi Lazar umachlokuso. Rather, the Gemara says the following. Rather, what's happening over here is that the machlokes in Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon is a much larger machlokes. What's the much larger machlokes? Take a look at Rashi. Ela amar Rav Papa la'afuki mid Rabbi Lazar machlokuso. Kilomar lo tim Rabbi Shimon akasav la'nedar shvo l'chod palig. We'll say the machlokes in Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon in the Mishnah is not only centered around the case where he wrote her an exemption from all neders and shvuos. Ela akule milsad Rabbi Lazar ubnei machlokuso palig. Palig areishav asefa. Visham inam dekam Rabbi Lazar b'Rabbanon mash. So I'm just going to read this and I'm going to translate it. So remember, we had another machlokes. The other machlokes in the Mishnah was, not a machlokes, but the Mishnah said that lemaisa, if a husband goes ahead and appoints his wife as an apotropis, so remember, what did the Mishnah say? He has the right to impose a shvua, shvuas apotropis upon her. What's the shvuas apotropis? That's not unique to a marriage, but shvuas apotropis, that if somebody's handling my business, I have the ability to impose a shvua upon them to make sure that they are being honest in the handling of my business. So the Mishnah says, if your CEO happens to be your wife, then lemaisa, you can impose a shvua upon her as well. If you remember, again, Rabbi Lazar came along in the Mishnah and said, not only can you impose that type of shvua, but you can even what? You can even impose a shvua afilu, right, on her thread, va'alisasan, on her dough. Why Rav Shimon's logic was because every woman is an apotropis on the things with which she does her household items, her household responsibilities. So she's an apotropis on the dough, she's an apotropis on thread. Therefore, Shimon comes along and says that what? That lemaisa, you can impose an oath upon her for all those things as well. So Rabbi Osei, now the Gemara is suggesting that there's two layers of the machlokes from Shimon and the Chacham in our Mishnah. Layer number one is, as we just said, layer number one is if the husband went ahead and wrote, I free you from all shvua and other responsibility, and now she wants to collect her ksuva, so the Rabbanon say he exempted her. Once he exempted her, she could collect her ksuva even without what Rabbi said, even without a shavua or a neder from the Yisomim. Rabbi Shimon says, no, there's halacha in nifras minichse Yisomim ela b'shavua. Not true. Even if he freed her, you can't collect from nichse Yisomim without shavua. Now, what's the Gemara suggesting? And there's another component in the machlokes. The Rabbanon accept the principle of Rabbi Lazar, that's what? That halacha lemaisa, a man can, assuming he didn't write anything to her, that a man could impose a shavua upon a woman for what purpose? To make sure that she is being honest with her thread and with her dough. However, again, Rabbi Osei comes along, Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that. And Rabbi Shimon says, we do not accept that premise. A man cannot impose a shvua upon his wife for how she handles the thread and the dough. Remember why? With Lashon of the Gemara, because ein adam dar im nachash bikfifa achas. He can't live with a snake in the same basket. Therefore, the Gemara now is suggesting that it is two layers of machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. Layer number one is, as we said before, in the case of where he freed her from all shvua liability, does she still need a shvua to collect from nichsei yisomim? Rabbanan say no. Rabbi Shimon says yes. Machlokes number two: does he have the right to impose what we'll call the shvuas apotropis on a woman for normal household duties? Rabbanan say yes. Yes, like Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Shimon says no. All right, Rabbi Lazar, we will stop over here. Meretz Hashem Mishnah tomorrow. Shkoyach.